Deuteronomy chapter 33, starting at verse 12. Of Benjamin he said, the beloved of the Lord shall dwell in the safety by him, who shelters him all the day long, and he shall dwell between his shoulders. And of Joseph he said, blessed of the Lord is his land, with the precious things of heaven, with the dew, and the deep lying beneath, with the precious fruits of the sun, with the precious produce of the months, with the best things of the ancient mountains, with the precious things of the everlasting hills, with the precious things of the earth and its fullness, and the favor of him who dwelt in the bush. Let the blessing come on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him who is separate from his brothers. His glory is like a firstborn bull, and his horns like the horns of the wild ox. Together with them he shall push the peoples to the ends of the earth. They are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and they are the thousands of Manasseh. And of Zebulun he said, rejoice, Zebulun, in your going out, and Issachar, in your tents. They shall call the peoples to the mountain. There they shall offer sacrifices of righteousness, for they shall partake of the abundance of the seas, and of treasures hidden in the sand. And of Gad he said, blessed is he who enlarges Gad. He dwells as a lion, and tears the arm and the crown of his head. He provided the first part for himself, because a lawgiver's portion was reserved there. He came with the heads of the people. He administered the justice of the Lord and his judgments with Israel. And of Dan he said, Dan is a lion's whelp. He shall leap from Bashan. And of Naphtali he said, O Naphtali, satisfied with favor and full of the blessing of the Lord, possess the west and the south. And of Asher he said, Asher is most blessed of sons. Let him be favored by his brothers, and let him dip his foot in oil. Your sandals shall be iron and bronze. As your days, so shall your strength be. There is no one like the God of Jeshurun, who rides the heavens to help you, and in his excellency on the clouds. The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. He will thrust out the enemy from before you, and will say, destroy. Then Israel shall dwell in safety, the fountain of Jacob alone. In a land of grain and new wine, his heaven shall also drop dew. Happy are you, O Israel. Who is like you, a people saved by the Lord? The shield of your help and the sword of your majesty. Your enemies shall submit to you, and you shall tread down their high places.
Any comments? Because we asked last time if you learned anything. Now I'll just ask comments right now before we begin. All of you were here last week, right?
Yes.
One thing I'm amazed by last week, as well as this, is that this was not for then, it's for now.
Actually, in the future. The latter part of the chapter tells you it's deep in the future.
Like in Joseph is verse 16, it's separate from his brothers.
Right.
And Manasseh.
Yeah. They're joined together as unity here at the end, as if they were one again. Quick brush up. Okay, remember verse 1? What does it say? The man of God. Very important that we keep this part in mind, because these are the words. Remember the 29th chapter? God started introducing through Moses a new covenant. And the new covenant started talking about a different heart and you don't have to go overseas to find the commandments of God. You don't have to go way up in heaven to find it. You don't have to travel anywhere, because where is it? It's near unto you, it's nigh unto you. Now that's where God is writing or promising to have, he makes it a present tense, but writing it within your heart, within your mind. That is an agreement that God started to saying a promise he was going to do, when he's going to write that new covenant or begin a new covenant. Not a new covenant, I should say, but to establish the statutes. You know, in the prayers we had this morning, and Ellie read it from 65, it's called the courts and the house and the temple. There's three things. What's the courts? What is the court of the Lord? What is the house of the Lord? And what is the temple? You know, it's interesting words. They're not just things that just casually. Three things are involved in there. And so when we come to these things, we have to say, where is it evolved into our lives? And how does it? We can all the courts have to deal with before his judgments. His statutes, his judgments basically are within the courts. And we have an interesting word here that we know that it says here. Where was that first part? We read across that word first. Maybe it's the fourth page. Number three. Verse 5. He was a king of what?
Just your room.
What does that mean?
Righteousness.
Uprightness and righteousness. Now, in one of the Psalms also says that the righteous will dwell in his courts. It's very fascinating to know that one of the first things the righteous person were they established, they're established within his courts. They live within his house, and they are part of the temple, all three. So it's all three parts of God is going to be connected. If I can use that for three parts of God, but three dwelling places where God is at is going to be done here. And now he's one of the uprightness and correction, which is true. We went to verse 6. And we're talking about Reuben. And I told you what it really says in Hebrew. The word few is not listed there in Hebrew. It means that he will be numbered. He'll be counted amongst those who are amongst the living and not amongst the dead. I remember mentioning last week, I said, what this is a promise for the whole house of Israel. The latter part of this chapter tells you that and makes it very clear that he is not just going to make it one tribe blessed this way and the other tribe being blessed that way, and the one that's being blessed over here receives none of the blessings of that one over there. Oh no, they'll receive it. Because it's just like we are here. When God grants unto you and gives you a gift, what are you supposed to do with it?
Use it.
Use it. Use it for the benefit of the group, other people. So this whole unity here we see, all these blessings that comes forth that Moses is expressing here, is not just for that tribe gets it because they did something better with God. No, it was a gift given to them, a blessing given to them, not because of their work of their hand, not because they were a good guy or a bad guy, not because they did anything special, but a blessing that God's given to them. And this is how God works. And it worked for all mankind in the very same exact identical way. There come a time when the blessings that we have received, we will be able to share it, if I can use that terminology, with an awful lot of people, and those people will be able to share their blessings with us instead of we having this conflict or this difficulty of hard to get along with one another. Because we have the flesh that's involved. The flesh is really a big, huge bummer in a lot of ways, you know. And then Judah, what is he going to do with Judah? Bring him in to the whole house of Israel, not separated from the rest, because he himself separated himself in history by himself and over by himself, and God's going to bring him back into the whole house of Israel. That's kind of an interesting way of looking at things. Of course, we know Levi. What are they supposed to do? Well, they They are to serve the living God. They are to do the holy temple. They are to do the parts. They do the things, the teaching. Teaching of what? The law and the Torah, the commandments. Levite, that's their function. And what's going to be a wonderful blessing for all the house of Israel is, remember that Levi is not a teacher because he went to college. Levi is not an important person because he happened to be Moses' brother. He actually was given a blessing. What was the blessing of the Levites? They would inherit or get the blessings that God, the rest of the tribes were to give to, God gives to the Levites, right? So it's kind of interesting here how God works as a unit of one, but in 12 different directions, or 12 different, I should say, blessings that we see here. With that put together, real quickly, now we'll go to Benjamin, verse 12. You got a little summary of where we were last week. Hey, interesting thing about Benjamin. What do you see here? What's the blessing that Benjamin has?
He's the Lord's beloved.
Dwells in his safety.
Dwells between his shoulders.
Dwells between his shoulders. Okay, I got a shoulder here. I got a shoulder here. What's between the two? My head. So within the mind and the heart, and God is what? Benjamin, my beloved. It's a blessing. They got a blessing because that's where God says, oh, it's right here. I've got you. You're part of my thoughts, part of my thinking, part of my reasoning why I am doing why I'm here. So Benjamin, even though Daniel will reach the point where Benjamin's almost wiped out when he gets into the book of Judges for things they should not have done, but God didn't take them out of his mind and throw them away and disregard them. You understand what I'm saying? He said, oh no, you're still there. And you're going to be there. You're going to be blessed because my mind is on you. You are my beloved. You are beloved. Now, which one of the tribes of Israel does not, or not God not call beloved? All of Israel says, you are my beloved. So he's pointing out the one thing about Benjamin. Benjamin's not going to be cast out of the mind of God. And what else? Part of it is that sometimes, you know, we have a kid on our shoulders. We carry the kid around. He's right between our shoulders. So in a sense, you know, the child or Benjamin is very much supported by and loved by and cherished by God, which all of Israel will benefit from. Which one of these tribes do you think has a closer relationship with God than the other ones? You know, you're really hard to separate it. Oh, one didn't get all that one. That one got this one, but that one got... And here's Benjamin right there. Oh, wow. Judah didn't even get that one, you know. But it's a blessing here. So I look at these blessings, definitely in the future. We'll see them in the future, the latter part of the chapter. Yes?
It sounds like Hasidim. It sounds like the people who sit and study and grow and learn and study.
But that goes to another one too, I believe. We'll keep on going down there.
Yeah.
Now, Joseph. The interesting thing about Joseph. Now, it looks like he got the lion's share. Of what?
Land.
The physical blessings around about. And will always have that wealth. He'll always have the huge abundance. Then he's always, what is he supposed to do with it?
Share it.
He can't eat it all. He might as well just share it with the rest of his brothers, the rest of the tribes of Israel. Now we know that these two particular people were divided in two parts. The blessed is his land with the prosperous things of the heaven and the dew and the deep living beneath. That means the soil or the produce comes to the ground, you know. Other things that would come to the ground, like
I said oil.
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 Oil. We've been abundant with oil.
Minerals.
Gold, silver. You know, abundance of the things that come up beneath the earth, which we use on a regular basis. Israel will always, or Judah will always, the chosen will always have those blessings. Once God has established these things, He will carry them out. He doesn't take them back. And we'll see at the end of this chapter. Okay, we'll see it at the end of the chapter. This is why something has to be deep in the future, because not all these tribes are working together as a unity of one, because not all these tribes have received the blessings. They become, you know, self-centered if they receive some of them. In the history we have of Israel and Ephraim, as Daniel goes through it, sometimes they were not friendly to the rest of the tribe, and sometimes they were. Depends on how they benefited from it. But yes, human beings involved, not God. Here we had the blessings that's going to come from God. I want to go to the interesting part here. I want to go to quickly. Verse 17. It's an interesting word. Interesting phrase. I would like for somebody to tell me what it says. His glory is like the firstborn. His horns like the horns of. Together with them, He pushes the peoples to the end of the earth. And that word 10,000, once again, I told you that's not what it says in Hebrew. It never comes close to that word 10,000. He says, and their abundance is in Ephraim, and their Eloth, or the family, is in Manasseh. What's this verse telling us?
It's describing both branches of Joseph. He's dividing them out. One is the firstborn bull, the other one's the horns of the wild ox. Which, I don't know, but he says they have to work together.
They work together. So we have one of them, right? Ephraim is probably the bull, and Manasseh is probably the wild ox, or the wild untamed bull. Okay? Both of them together do something. They push the people to the ends of the earth. What does that mean?
Spreads everybody around.
What are horns representing? He uses the horns to do something. To rise up against both Ephraim and Manasseh together are powerful in war. As a unity, both of them will fight together, and they have pushed the ends of the earth, the people into the earth, they are thousands. Yes?
The word earth, is that for Eretz being the land, or earth being the whole planet? Do you know?
It would, in this case, it's Eretz land.
Okay, so, okay, pushing the world into this
land. Right. Whenever a horn is used, biblically speaking, talk about somebody who's in has a crown. One horn, he's in control of one country. He's got two crowns, he's got control of two countries. Now the Messiah has how many?
12.
He has 12. He has 12 horns. By the way, the word crown, it's an ancient word in English. It meant horn. Ancient English word. So use the word horn, it means a crown. We use the modern terminology, a crown today. Okay? It's an ancient English word, but goes back to way back. And that's why you had the biblical terminologies. That on the beast there was how many?
10
crowns or 10 horns. Okay, means crown. So the word is interchangeable, and it just gives you a little more information. That's a little minor thing. Doesn't really matter too much. Now, Zebulun, he said, this is interesting, these two together. We're in verse 18. Rejoice, Zebulun, and you're going out. Going out where? What is the blessing that Zebulun receives when he goes out to do something or to achieve something or to accomplish something? What happens?
There's no fear.
There's what?
No fear. There's no fear.
No fear. Plus, what else? Whatever you go out to do, to seek and find, you will find it. You will do it. You will rejoice. He says now almost the opposite thing to the very next tribe. And it says, put it bluntly, Issachar, in a sense, rejoice in your dwelling place. Why? They, both of these two, shall have the peoples of the mountain. They shall offer sacrifices of righteousness. For they shall partake of the abundance of the sea and the treasures hidden in the sand. So both of these two are going to be doing something. What are they going to be having? They're going to be what? Dwell in the mountains. And be successful when they go out, go forth to the seas. And they're going to bring in the produce of the seas. All right. Those are physical things. We'll get to spiritual later. But it says, they shall offer sacrifices of righteousness. That's a pretty good thing to rejoice for, right? So these kind of like two opposite. One's going out, they're doing something, and they're going to rejoice, and it's going to, and they're going to offer sacrifices. The other one stays home, dwelling place. It's abundant. The treasures are hidden within the sand or within the earth. They're going to utilize it. They're going to be blessed with it. Both are in the tent, and they were going to be blessed. Both of them are, in a sense, connected to one another. Can't separate them, kind of like at birth. But once again, these have not yet arrived. These are things that God said He's going to do. Gad. What's He going to do with Gad? Blessed is he who enlarges Gad, making Gad bigger than what it really is, increasing the number, and also increasing a lot of other things in this case. He dwells as a lion and tears the arm and the crown of his head. What does that mean?
His arms, his physical strength, the crown of his head.
He tears the arm and the crown off of his head. Whose head?
And the crown.
Here's
the arm and crown.
Enemy's head?
I'm sorry, what?
Obviously not his own head.
Not his own head, no. Somebody else's head.
Not his enemy's head.
His enemy's head.
Anne's
head. His arm. Off the head of the one who blesses him?
No, off the head of the one that's going to. He defeats the army as well as the leadership of that army. What's an arm? An arm is that which, in this particular case, goes out to do some damage. It's the war arm. So it's the military, in a sense, we would call it today. And in the head, it is crown, meaning that the leadership, he is going to do what? He's going to tear the crown off as well.
He wins in battle.
He wins in battle. He wins in battle. A lot of things have yet to come about for all of Israel. Verse 21. He provides the first part for himself.
His spoils.
Why?
Because the lawgiver's portion was reserved.
Keep on going.
He came with the heads of his people.
And?
He ministered the justice of Yah and his judgments.
Okay, now we've got a little picture here. Now Gad's going to be increased. He's going to be enlarged because he does something. He tears the arm off and he lowers and takes the crown off. And he provides the first part. Now, that's what this means now. It doesn't mean the first part for himself. Got to get this into Hebrew thinking. He saw because of the lawgiver's portion was what? Received there. What does that mean? Who's the lawgiver?
Moses.
Okay. What's the first thing that Gad was supposed to see? Because that word provide for the first part means to see the first thing or the basic principles of the first concept of the law. First thing that Gad will see is the basic principle of the law. And he does what he does with it? He provides the first. That first part is kind of an odd word. In Hebrew, it's more like he provides what he sees first. What does he see first? What the lawgiver gave. What does that mean? He came or dwells with the heads of peoples. What is he going to do with this? See, Gad has to do with the lawgiver. What does he see the lawgiver tell him to do?
Justice.
He administers justice. And then what else he does? Judgments. Now, what does that mean? See, kind of Gad's kind of a little bit confusing because we have to be careful how we read Gad. Gad has what? He dwells as a lion. Who else dwells as a lion?
Judah.
And also Messiah is known as a lion. So a lion has some kind of an approach, right? It's going to attack. And the lion attacks the arm and the crown. Why is he attacking the arm or the crown? To administer justice and to administer judgment. When the arm is taken and the crown is taken, justice has been performed, judgment has been carried out. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because this is the whole concept of Gad. Now, when the time comes and God brings all of Israel back together again, what is he said that they're going to do? The enemy round about them will be, they're going to be facing judgment. Who do you believe is going to judge the house of the world? The rest of the world.
God's saints.
The house of Israel. Why would the house of Israel be carrying out and doing things like making judgments? Why doesn't just God do it? Because he taught Israel first the law. The lawgiver gave Israel the very beginning. Gad, remember, is only part of Israel, right? And they are going to carry out what?
It's like what the Apostle Paul told the people in his letter. He said, you are taking each other to secular, godless, pagan courts. Why?
Why?
You are going to judge angels someday, and you can't judge the simple stuff?
Yep, the simple stuff. So what's happening, all of Israel is going to be, I'm sorry, put simplicity, the court of the Lord. You understand what I'm saying? And in the court of the Lord is going to be righteous people and are going to be flourishing within the courts of the Lord. When you think and the great white throne judgment, and he who sits upon it is referring to only one thing or one being, he is going to have a lot of judges. And the reason why he's going to have a lot of judges to carry out his what? justice. The reason why he's going to, because he, that's the job that he assigned the house of Israel with in the first place. Why do you think there are 12 gates into the house of the Lord, or into the temple, or into, I should say, entrance ways into the court of Jerusalem, that holy mountain coming down? All 12 will be part of all this picture. Do you understand what I'm saying so far? The picture is much bigger than just a one blessing for one family, and the rest of them received nothing else. Where do you think do you think that no other tribe is going to have, like it did with Issachar and Zebulun, that's the only one that's going to offer sacrifices of righteousness? Or why would have the rest of the tribes? No, they get to share in all that, because they're going to have part of that righteousness too. As a unity of one, not a unity of individuals. And what the Apostle Paul says, there are many gifts, but what?
One spirit.
That one spirit gives out the gifts. And everyone in the church, a real simple one to figure out, right? Some were apostles, some were evangelists, some were teachers, some were preachers. All right? Each one's got their own. And what did he say? The hand cannot say, or the foot cannot say, how come I'm not the hand? Because you see, if you don't have a whole body together as a unity of one, you have a deformed body. Right? And so what we're seeing here in these blessings in the 33rd chapter is the whole body. And each part is fitly joined together to make a unity of a complete house of Israel. Does that make sense to what I'm saying? The blessing. Sometimes I know I've read the past and they couldn't figure out how come some got blessings and others got curses. And I'm looking at them and saying, no, they didn't get all curses. They have the unity of one. Dan, funny one. Here's another one here. Lion again. What's he going to do? He's going to leap from back. Where's he going to leap to? Well, we know where he's leaping from. He's going to come out of Fashion. He's going to do carry out what? What is the whip of a lion? The force of a lion.
Isn't the whelp a baby?
The whelp is a baby. It's a child lion.
Child lion?
Baby lion, yeah.
Baby lion, yeah.
They care, but they don't care.
So what does that mean?
Chasing them.
When you see a baby lion, what do you think?
Mama's near.
You know, and when you see the animal kingdom, animal world, animal channels, once in a while they show animals, and sometimes it's about lions, and sometimes there's young lions. Yeah. What do young lions do?
Play.
They play. They leap. They're joyous. They're happy. You know why? Because
Mommy's watching.
No. They got their food.
Oh,
all right? They didn't have to go out and hunt for it. They didn't have to go kill anything. The food was brought to them by, in this case, brought to them by whom?
Mom.
By, in this case, God. God's going to provide so that the dam will be happy and leaping like a lion and full of joy and happy. Because he's satisfied. He's happy. You know, so somebody look at that thing, right? But all of the house of Israel will have an abundance, and they will jump. They want Dan to be part of that group. Unusual gift, you think. Well, yeah, maybe, but then God's the one that gets you to the mountain, no one else. Verse, where are we at? Oh, verse 23. Naphtali, he said, Naphtali, satisfied with what? And full blessings of the Lord possesses the south and the west. South and west and south. That, by the way, it's Hebrew didn't have a word. It means possesses the southwest. That's what it really means. Possesses the southwest. Of what? Of what? Of Arizona? Now, in the southwest, in Israel, what do you see?
Gaza.
What?
Gaza.
And?
Egypt. Saudi Arabia.
Desert. Wasteland, yes. But what did God say he's going to do to that wasteland? He's going to bring forth prosperity. So even the most desolated place of Israel, God says, I will bring forth. The desert will bloom.
It's not the desert that already blooms.
That's man's doing. We're going to talk about God's blessing of the desert. Now, if you are a person, individual person, individual nation, and you are what? Desolate. You have no, spiritually speaking, you're kind of like a desert. There's a song we sing, I can't remember what it was, or have a song sung to us about the, being desolate, and God blesses the arid places, brings forth from the ground, or brings forth, in a sense, spiritually speaking, growth will come forth from out of you. Yes?
That'd be Yahweh's original boundaries.
These are all promises of God and not of man.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, the boundaries of Israel right now is small compared to what's
right. Going to be. We already know from Book of Revelations how big that's going to be. I mean, it's bigger than, I think, the territory of the United States, right? We're talking spiritually speaking now. All right. And Asher. Asher is the most blessed of sons. Wait a minute. What happened to the other ones? Wasn't Benjamin? No, he's most beloved. Oh, this is the most blessed. How is he most blessed of the sons? Let him be favored by his brothers and let him, what? Dip his foot in oil. Now, what do you mean by blessed? Okay, I mean happy. He's the happiest of the bunch. He's the most pleased of the bunch. Or he will be. And he will be what by his brothers?
Favored.
Favored. You know, how many times have we wanted to be favored? Sometimes when we ask a prayer, God, and our employer, we ask God, says, help me to have favor in his sights. And the word of God says you could ask that, you know. What does that mean to have favor in the sight of your employer? Does he give you money? No.
Part of it.
Be part of it, yes. Go ahead.
Good treatment.
Yeah.
Maybe if there's layoffs, you'll be one who won't go. That kind of thing. There's all kinds of ways you can have favor.
All different kinds of favors. One of the most important favors is that he will see the hand of your work and will be pleased. And he will want you to work for him. Right? More than just because you want more money. You want favor in his eyes as employer because you do good work. He wants to see that. So in this particular case, we're going to have that Asher is going to have favor with his rest of his brothers. Going to see him. Asher's going to be someone who they're going to like. He's a good guy. Don't find any fault in him. What's the other word I want to use? Anyway, and your sandals shall be as iron and brass, and your on Nazir days you shall be strong. Now, verse 26 changes the entire subject. Because that's the end of the blessings. Now we have a completion of it, all put together as a unity. There is no one like the God of uprightness. All right, that's a good Hebrew word though, Yeshurun, who rides the heavens to help you, Israel, and his excellency on the clouds. Who's coming in the clouds? The Messiah's got to come in the clouds, right, from heaven. The eternal God is your refuge. Underneath are the everlasting arms. That means arms to protect you. You shall thrust out the enemy from before you. and will say, destroy. Verse 28. Then, not before, then Israel shall dwell in safety. So now we have this verse 26 and 27 telling us that all the house of Israel and all the blessings that God's going to grant to them, we look back and say, oh, the double horns. Oh, what are they going to do? They're going to do something. They're going to go to war. And they're going to go to fight. And they're going to drive their enemy to the ends of the earth. Oh, that's interesting. And what about the one about the arm being ripped off and the crown being thrown away and then justice and righteousness being established? Oh, my. You know, those things are yet to come. But they're going to have to come when the Messiah lands his feet on the Mount of Olives. And begins to establish, during the 1,000-year reign, people, Israel has a big job to do. A mighty big job to do. They have a lot of work for them. All right? Israel, then Israel shall dwell in safety, and the fountain of Jacob alone, and in a land of grain and new wine, his heaven shall also drop dew. Happy are you, Israel, who is like you, a people saved by the Eternal. We know the prophecy has toward the end that when the leader of Gog comes down and says, they don't have any military might. Good mother at peace. They've been at peace for 1,000 years. Oh, I think I'll go to war. Guess what? You've been delivered. What does it say? Your body is completely consumed. You don't even get that far. What's a blessing? The shield, God is the shield of your help, or the bogan of your help, the sword of your majesty. The enemy shall submit to you. You shall tread down their high places. So this is the promise of all the house of Israel. So we see the end of 33. We see him as a unity as one. And when all those blessings come together, what is it telling us here? You as a unit of one are going to do something. You're going to go before your enemy and you're going to say, destroy. God's going to give the command. And you will destroy them. All right? How the house of Israel will destroy them. Believe it or not, there are more than one enemy. You know, sometimes you think the devil's the only one. There's a lot more out there than just the devil. There's a lot of them out there. They're in what we call abundance. And they're going to be destroyed. By? Sometimes we think, okay, God, yes, God's going to do the destruction. Yes, God's going to do the killing. Yes, God's going to do the justice. Yes, God's going to do the final say-so. But that's not what Scripture leads to. No, you're not. You're going to judge. What does it mean to judge? You've got to make a decision. And your judgment must be just. And it must be what else?
Righteous.
Must be what?
Righteous.
Righteous judgment. Well, that's what the but justice is one thing. What is justice compared to judgment? What's it do?
It carries it out.
Judgment carries out the justice. So in order to get to justice, you've got to find out who's guilty. Where do you go to find out who's guilty?
Court.
To the court of the Lord. Which house of Israel will be the court of the Lord. You understand what I'm saying? We have to look future, far deep in the future, to see where we're going with this, where God is going with this, because these promises that he has listed on these in the book of 33rd chapter has not been fulfilled as a whole, especially the latter part. The latter part says what? Then Israel shall be dwell in safety, in the fountains of Jacob alone, and the land of grain of new wine, and his heaven shall drop his dew. Happy are you, Israel, who is like you, a people served or saved by the Lord. That hasn't happened yet, has it? But it will happen. Not because of any actions of people becoming righteous, These are promises that God's going to fulfill within them. It is God. In this chapter, I can't remember what it was, I think it was the 65th chapter of Psalms. It says, whom God calls, not who calls upon God, but whom God calls into his court. That's a different story. All of Israel will be called into the court of God. You understand what I'm saying? Those are promises and promises. And there are thousands and thousands of promises in the Bible. And if we are joined ourselves with the house of Israel, whichever one you want to be joined with, you will be part of the blessings. I was going to read. I won't do it today because it's too long. But Psalms 90, don't have to read it there. That's written by Moses. And it's kind of a very interesting psalm, because it's where it says the man of God. So when Moses wrote that psalm, he's actually quoting God face to face. Interesting when you read the 90th chapter. That is what God says.